Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. I thought we'd try something a little different today. There is a great book out written by Marlo Thomas, and Marlo Thomas is the award-winning actress and best-selling author and the National Outreach Director for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Of course, her father was Danny Thomas. She wrote a book called The Right Words at the Right Time, which she did. Talked to a lot of celebrities, famous people, and asked them, when did you hear the right words, and what was the right time that you heard them? And tell a little story about it. And in the introduction, Marlo writes, my father chose the right words at the right time. And throughout my life, I've always been able to cut to the chase by asking myself, am I running my race or somebody else's? The impact those words had on me made me wonder if others had experienced the same thing. I set about collecting stories from remarkable people who reached back into their own lives in search of that moment when words made all the difference. And here's one of them. And this is written by someone we all know, Paul McCartney. His essay was entitled, There Will Be an Answer. Paul writes, I was going through a really difficult time around the autumn of 1968. It was late in the Beatles' career, and we had begun making a new album, a follow-up to the White Album. As a group, we were starting to have problems. I think I was sensing the Beatles were breaking up, so I was staying up too late at night, drinking, clubbing, the way a lot of people were at the time. I was really living and playing hard. The other guys were all living out in the country with their partners, but I was still a bachelor in London with my own house in St. John's Wood. And that was kind of at the back of my mind also, that maybe it was about time I found someone, because it was before I got together with Linda. So I was exhausted. Some nights I'd go to bed and my head would just flop on the pillow, and when I'd wake up, I'd have difficulty pulling it off, thinking, good job, I woke up just then, or I might have suffocated. Then one night, somewhere between deep sleep and insomnia, I had the most comforting dream about my mother, who died when I was only 14. She had been a nurse, my mom, and very hardworking because she wanted the best for all of us. We weren't a well-off family. We didn't have a car. We just about had a television. So both of my parents went out to work, and mom contributed a good half to the family income. At night, when she came home, she would cook, so we didn't have a lot of time with each other. But she was just a very comforting presence in my life, and when she died, one of the difficulties I had, as the years went by, was that I couldn't recall her face so easily. That's how it is for everyone, I think. As each day goes by, you just can't bring their face into your mind. You have to use photographs and reminders like that. So in this dream, 12 years later, my mother appeared, and there was her face, completely clear, particularly her eyes, and she said to me very gently, very reassuringly, let it be. It was lovely. I woke up with a great feeling. It was really like she had visited me at this very difficult point in my life and gave me this message, be gentle, don't fight things, and just try and go with the flow and it will all work out. So, being a musician, I went right over to the piano and started writing a song. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me. Mary was my mother's name. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. There will be an answer, let it be. It didn't take long. I wrote the main body of it in one go, and then the subsequent verses developed from there. When all the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer. Let it be. I thought it was special, so I played it to the guys and around a lot of people, and later it also became the title of the album because it had so much value to me and because it just seemed definitive, those three little syllables. Plus, when something happens like that, as if by magic, I think it has a resonance that other people notice too. Not very long after the dream, I got together with Linda, which was the saving of me. And it was as if my mom had sent her, you could say. The song is also one of the first things Linda and I ever did together musically. These days, the song has become almost like a hymn. We sang it at Linda's memorial service, and after September 11th, the radio played it a lot, which made it the obvious choice for me to sing when I did the benefit concert in New York City. Even before September 11th, people used to lean out of cars and trucks and say, "Yo, Paul, Let It Be." So those words are really very special to me, because not only did my mom come to me in a dream and reassure me with them at a very difficult time in my life, and sure enough, things did get better after that, but also in putting them into a song and recording it with the Beatles, it became a comforting, healing statement for other people too. Let it be. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Kind of interesting little essay, "There Will Be an Answer," written by Paul McCartney, from a terrific song and a terrific album. I thought I'd share that. I thought it was kind of interesting. Well, of course, Thursday came in rather mildly. And will warmth march on? That's the question. The month rarely ends with a cold snap. Since March came in like a lamb, should we expect it to go out with a roar? Well, not likely, weather statistics show. In the past 52 years, there have been 10 times when March started out warm and ended with a cold snap, according to Jim Angel, state climatologist. Maybe he was the same guy that said we were going to have the most miserable winter of all time. Well, it didn't work out, did it? Temperatures generally rise by 11 degrees during March, Angel said. The average temperature is 32 on March 1st and 43 on March 31st. Some say the old English proverb that March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb originates from the position of stars in the night sky. The constellation of Leo, the lion, rises in the east as March approaches, and Aries, the lamb, appears in the sky toward the end of the month. So that's what that saying's all about. It's astrological. It's not really pertinent to the weather. Interesting. So we'll see. In a few weeks, we'll let you know if Jim Angel was right or not. Well, certainly something coming up. Our good friend Daryl Nitz, Main Stage, proudly announces Voices of Chicago, a diverse musical celebration honoring Chicago's 175th anniversary of official incorporation, performed by a cast of esteemed Chicago performers for a concert engagement March 3rd and 4th. Tickets are on sale now at themainstage.com or 866-468-3401. Voices of Chicago is a concert event paying tribute to the great musical styles that make Chicago the city of the century. Jazz, blues, gospel, folk, pop, and soul were made famous by Chicagoans Dinah Washington, Coco Taylor, Nat King Cole, Mel Torme, Steve Allen, Jules Stein, Tommy Dorsey, and Steve Goodman, among others. An all-star cast of Chicago's top nightclub vocalists comprises Voices of Chicago: Kimberly Gordon, Skip Gripparis, Jeff Hedberg, Lynn Jordan, Mark Madsen, Liz Mandeville, Isaiah Mitchell, Daryl Nitz, Denise Tomasello, and special guest, the legendary Audrey Morris, complete the cast with musical direction by Becky Menzie and Nick Christensen on percussion. Each vocalist is deeply rooted in Chicago music and has garnered many rave reviews and accomplishments. Audrey Morris is a Chicago legend, having performed among the late and great Chicago nightclubs for half a century and is currently the artist in residence in Maxim's. Kimberly Gordon is an artist in residence at the Green Mill and has been holding the Sunday night coveted spot for over 9 years. Soul singer Lynn Jordan performs at the Drake and Chicago Sun-Times raves. Lynn Jordan is great. No, she's fabulous. Blues great Liz Mandeville has the Chicago Sun-Times' Dave Hoekstra saying, "Mandeville's repertoire is an evolving world of images on a blues canvas." Sage's nightclub icon Denise Tomasello Davenport's frontman Daryl Nitz, Pederino's Monday Night Live host Becky Menzie, Andy's Jazz Club regular Jeff Hedberg help round out the cast. Also featured are Mark Manson, Isaiah Mitchell, and Skip Gripiris. Voices of Chicago is a musical celebration not to be missed March 3rd at 8 o'clock and March 4th at 7 o'clock. And again, for information, mainstage.com or phone 866-468-3401. Should be a nice evening. Should be a nice evening Saturday and Sunday. So if you have a chance to go up to the main stage, beautiful, beautiful venue. Cocktail lounge, restaurant out front. In fact, we just did our show. Kevin Moore presents Score by Score, the best of Broadway musicals. The music of the night and evening with Andrew Lloyd Webber there a couple weeks ago. Very successful and just a terrific place. Enjoy, have a few cocktails, sit around in a cabaret-type atmosphere. And it's very, very, very enjoyable, very relaxing. And, of course, in honor of St. Paddy's Day tonight, get a jump on St. Paddy's with authentic Irish music at Metropolis. Fiddler Liz Carroll will be joined by Irish pianist Cormac McCarthy for a must-see St. Paddy's concert at Metropolis tonight, March 3rd. A native Chicagoan, Liz Carroll wows audiences worldwide, recently including President Obama with her unmatched fiddle skills. Liz also earned a Grammy nomination for her critically acclaimed album Double Play, mixing traditional Irish tunes with her own compositions. Liz Carroll creates a unique, eclectic show. Grab a drink from our bar and take in the beautiful sounds of Ireland from Liz and Irish pianist Cormac McCarthy. Liz Carroll and Cormac McCarthy come to Metropolis March 3rd at 7:30. Liz Carroll and Cormac McCarthy are part of the live music series at Metropolis, which brings some of the highest-level musical talent to the Chicagoland area. More live music shows in the 2011-2012 season include Brett Michaels' Get Your Rock On Tour 2012. In fact, we're trying to get Brett Michaels. He won the Apprentice. Remember Celebrity Apprentice a couple years ago? We're trying to get him on the show hopefully next week. The world-famous Glenn Miller Orchestra. The Neverly Brothers. Not the Everly Brothers. The Neverly Brothers. Piano Man, a tribute to Elton John and Billy Joel. Kevin Moore presents Score by Score, an evening with George Gershwin. And Heartache Tonight, a tribute to the Eagles. So for information, give the Metropolis a call at 847-577-2121. Of course, it's located down in the heart of Arlington Heights, downtown Arlington Heights, 111 West Campbell. Terrific place and just a wonderful place to see a show and enjoy a lot of great talented people. It would be fun to have Brett Michaels on the show because I understand he's a very nice man and we're trying to get that worked out. We would have had Liz on the show, but she was doing a podcast at the same time. We've had her on the show before. What a talented lady she is. Won so many awards all around the Chicagoland area for her work as a fiddle player and certainly one of the best in the world. So, again, the Metropolis' number is 847-577-2121. And, of course, coming up on St. Patrick's Day on March 17th, again at the Metropolis, as Flanagan's Wake returns to Metropolis, adding laughter to St. Paddy's Day. As part of Metropolis' Patrick's Day tradition, Flanagan's Wake is coming back to Metropolis on March 17th for two performances at 5 and 8 on St. Patrick's Day. It's on its 18th year, but as Brian Belly Bunyan, Flanagan's best friend, says, we'll keep waking him until we get it right. In what NBC called one of the funniest shows you'll ever see, Flanagan's friends and family grieve over his death in Irish fashion with stories, songs, and enough alcohol. So grab a drink from Metropolis' bar and let Flanagan Wake teach you the Irish way to perform. Who knows? Maybe you'll even get to share some of your own stories in this interactive performance. Again, that's March 17th on St. Patrick's Day at 5 and 8, and the box office 847-577-2121. You know, of course, we had the Oscars last week. I guess this will be the last time we talk about this. And we didn't do too badly. Picked most of them. Not quite a few of them. Best Picture, of course, went to The Artist, the silent movie. First one since 100 years ago or something. Lead actor, Jean Dujardin for The Artist. Lead actress, Meryl Streep. And he didn't pick that one. I picked Viola Davis for The Help. But Meryl Streep won it for The Iron Lady. I think what she said half of America saying, oh, not her again. I was in that half, actually. Best director, Michael Hazanavicius for The Artist. Supporting actor, Christopher Plummer for Beginners. The oldest Oscar winner, now at 82 years old. 2 years younger than the 84-year-old Oscars. Supporting actress, Octavia Spencer. Writing adapted screenplay, The Descendants, Alexander Payne. Writing original screenplay, which should have won because it was a terrific movie, Midnight in Paris. The animated feature film was Gore Verbinski's Rango, of course, with Johnny Depp. Foreign language film, we picked it also, A Separation. And finally, musical origin score. We missed on that one. I thought it was going to be the Rio song written by Sergio Mendez. But Man or Muppet, I want it from the movie The Muppets. So there you have it. There you have it. You know, there's a great new restaurant in downtown LaGrange. We had the opportunity of stopping by there a week or so ago. Just terrific. It's called Fireside Wood-Fired Pizza and Cafe. Greg Gron runs it and with his family. It's located at 18 West Harris, and Harris is right at the corner where the Starbucks is in downtown LaGrange. And this restaurant is about a half a block west of the Starbucks on the south side of the street, 18 West Harris. Terrific place and terrific pizza. Cook the pizza in one of the brick ovens and eat it piping hot. You know, it's the kind of pizza where you have to eat it when it's coming out of the oven. You can't take it home, because eat it right there, because that's when it's the tastiest. Some, you know, they, I think, are made out of cardboard, and you could take it home, leave it outside for a couple of days and still heat it up. It still tastes the same. But this is just terrific fresh pizza, fresh ingredients, great salads. Had a terrific tomato and mozzarella salad. It was just wonderful, just a terrific place. And if you have the opportunity, you're in downtown LaGrange, and they have a lot of great restaurants in downtown LaGrange. So the Caprese salad, like I said, very, very tasty with the vinegar over it. Just terrific. Fireside Wood-Fired Pizza and Cafe. For information, the phone number is 708-639-4432. Or you could log onto their website, fireside@lagrange.comcastbiz.net. Fireside Wood-Fired Pizza and Cafe. Yes, for Greg. And enjoy the artwork on the walls, too, because they have some very talented local artists who have put their pictures up on the walls. It's kind of neat. Yeah, we had something that came up, of course, a few days ago. Kind of sad. And that was the passing of kind of a rock icon, I think you would call him, Davy Jones from the Monkees. He had the opportunity of having Davy on my show a while back, a couple times. He'd come to Chicago quite often doing revival shows and so forth. And he just a very, very talented man, very friendly man, too. For a person who's worldwide success, you'd be surprised how down-to-earth he was. I remember one time I hit him on the show, and my brother was talking, and I said, well, I had Davy Jones on the show. Oh, no, you didn't. I said, I'm serious, I did. No, you didn't. I said, okay, here. So, of course, we taped the shows, and I put it on the CD, and he had such a distinctive voice, there was no way you could not tell it was Davy Jones. So the moment he talked, that was Davy Jones. He had that Manchester English accent. And much of what you've seen on TV having to do with music, from the co-ed covers of Glee and back through the creation of MTV itself, can be traced back to the Monkees, and especially Davy Jones. He epitomized kind of television's visual translation of the pop idol and helped convince America that rock and roll had a place in its living rooms after all. He originally was training as a jockey, and he turned to acting, and he joined the Monkees in 1965 with Mickey Dolenz. He was kind of the zany one playing the drums, and Peter Tork was kind of the goofy one playing the guitar, and Mike Nesmith, who was the serious one, playing the bass. And the band embarked on a wildly popular U.S. television show. How popular? The Monkees sold more than 50 million records, and in 1967 outsold both the Beatles, after whom they were modeled, and the Rolling Stones. In fact, Mr. Jones himself was so omnipresent that another emerging pop star, whose name was really David Jones, had to change his name to David Bowie, just to avoid confusion. So David Bowie's name is really David Jones. As the sitcom premiered in September of 1966, the Monkees' first single, Last Train to Clarksville, became a number one hit. The show caught on with audiences featuring fast-paced, helter-skelter comedy inspired as much by the Marx Brothers as the Beatles. At first, though, only Nesmith could actually play an instrument. The Monkees were, however, supported by enviable talent. Carole King wrote Pleasant Valley Sunday, and Neil Diamond penned I'm a Believer. Hopefully we'll be able to listen to those in the show today. The music was played by session musicians, often members of L.A.'s behind-the-scenes Wrecking Crew, a loose group that included Glenn Campbell and Leon Russell. Of course, Glenn Campbell also played for the Beach Boys. The formula worked. The Monkees scored more hits with such songs as I Want to Be Free, Daydream Believer, and Valerie, all with Mr. Jones and Lee's vocals. So kind of interesting. So I guess we say rest in peace to Davy Jones. He was just 66. He had a family and so forth. But certainly touched the lives and hearts and the musical sensibilities of a lot of people in and around the world. So I thought we'd play a little music from Davy Jones, and we're going to start out maybe with the theme from the Monkees and segue right into their big hit, Last Train to Clarksville. Play a little music from the Monkees. And we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
We come walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. And people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
We go where we want to. Do what we like to do. We don't have time to get restless. There's always something new.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. And people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We're just trying to be friendly. Come and watch us sing and play. We're the young generation. And we've got something to say. Oh.
Or anywhere, just look over your shoulder. Guess who'll be standing there?
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. And people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. Say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We're just trying to be friendly. Come and watch us sing and play. We're the young generation, and we've got something to say.
So that was a theme from the Monkees. We're going to get back to Last Train to Clarksville, too, and a kind of a tribute to Davy Jones, as we lost him last week. Well, once again, it's time to dust off the green sweaters and take out the Irish walking sticks as Mercy Home for Boys and Girls prepares for another wonderful event during the season of St. Patrick. Celebrate St. Patrick's Day all month long. Join Mercy Home for Shamrocks for Kids. Mercy Home for Boys and Girls invites the public to be part of a solution for kids in crisis this March while celebrating all things Irish. Throughout this month, its annual Shamrock for Kids program will feature family-friendly Irish-themed activities and events while raising funds and awareness that help abused, neglected, and at-risk children. Shamrocks for Kids is named for Mercy Home's distinctive green shamrock lapel pin and ribbon. As they do every year this month, volunteers will hit the streets distributing shamrock pins for donations to Mercy Home at Chicago area St. Patrick's Day parades and celebrations, including, let's make sure we got the list here, on March 10th, Saturday, March 10th, Forest Park, St. Patrick's Day parade. On March 11th, we have two. We have one on the north side. Nobody pays attention to that. But the one on the south side is we pay attention to. Of course, down Western Avenue from 103rd to 115th. Then on March 16th, select downtown Chicago locations to get our lapel pins, and Saturday, March 17th, the Chicago St. Patrick's Day Parade. Following the Chicago St. Patrick's Day Parade on March 17th, Mercy Home will gather with friends and family at the Chicago Hilton on Michigan Avenue for Mercy Home's 17th annual Shamrocks for Kids post-parade celebration. Party kicks off at 1 at the Chicago Hilton, 720 South Michigan Avenue. As in the past, this is very much a family event with everyone in casual parade attire, many coming directly from the downtown parade, in an extremely festive mood. Corned beef, cabbage, potatoes, soft drinks, beer, music, step dancers, pipe bands, special children's entertainment, and lunches for the kids combine to make a really fun afternoon. And everything is included in the ticket price. On the line with us right now is the award-winning businessman, a person sincerely dedicated and carrying on the tradition of service to others, begun by the great Father Jim Close and now the legacy of Father Scott Donahue, one of the most welcoming people in Chicago, and the director of development for the Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, now celebrating their 17th annual Shamrocks for Kids celebration in honor of St. Patrick's Day, our good pal, Mr. Mark Schmelzer. Mark, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you very much for having me on.
Great to have you. And it's that time of month. You know, we start on March 1st and we go all the way to 17th. That's one heck of a celebration.
It truly is, and it's why they call it the Month of Mercy. And O'Brien's, they also host the Month O' Mercy. and just so many celebrations all over Chicago and so many ways that people can get involved.
You know, it's always a pleasure and an honor for me to work with you and certainly Scott Donahue and Richie Daniels to get the word out, to make sure everybody knows what's going on out there, people can pay attention to what's happening and participate in such a great group of people like Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, Mark.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And we're honored by your help. You're so great to us every year to help us get that word out. And it really depends. The success of this campaign really does depend on getting the word out there, because it's a full participatory kind of event, and in particular we need volunteers to get out there and join us. So they can contact us at our website at mercyhome.org, or they can call if they want to be a volunteer, a Shamrocks volunteer, they can call us at 312-738-7551. But again, the biggest part of the fundraising effort and the awareness raising effort is getting those volunteers out there in full force at all the parades and all these celebrations that we'll be at, and selling those pins for small donations to Mercy Home.
Well, we got a parade on the south side this year. We didn't have that last year.
Yeah, I grew up there. In fact, I grew up a couple blocks from Mr. Daniels there. Somehow the Sox stuck with me and not with him. But I don't know how to explain it. You'll have to ask him if he comes on your show. But in any event, I've been going to that parade many, many years myself. So it's really, really great that we'll be there. That community has been so wonderful. You know, our girls' home is actually down there.
Right, right.
Morgan Park.
With the old Cenacle, right?
Yes. And it was prior to that, it was the Walgreen Mansion.
Right, right, right.
We've been there since 1987 after the sisters had moved on. So it's been a great haven for young women who have these challenges and crises as well.
Well, tell us a little bit about Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, Mark.
Sure. Well, this year we're happy to celebrate our 125th.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. So we're really doing a lot of celebrations all year long, and people can go to our website throughout the year to kind of get updated on that. But since 1887, since we opened, we have been, a haven for kids who have been in difficult circumstances. Back in those days, it was, orphans who had or homeless waifs who had come to the city in search of work and found other things instead, usually negative dangers and things like that. Of course, we've evolved over time, and now we take care of a lot of kids, about 134 kids at any one time, who live with us full-time. And they come from a variety of different circumstances, but they're all very challenging circumstances, abuse, neglect, really poor school, maybe poor schools, quite often really violent neighborhoods, kids who are traumatized by their life experiences. And so for them to succeed in life, they certainly need the good educational support that we provide. But before they can, they also need to remove the other obstacles in their lives. So we help them with wraparound services, with therapeutic support, with job training, and all kinds of encouragement. And we give them experiences that they've never had before. You know, some of them have never had the experience of earning a paycheck. So we try to give them access to job skills and their first summer jobs, and then some of the older kids get internships because of the wonderful friendships we have throughout the business community who open their doors to our kids to give them that that experience.
And Mercy Home is open for programs and meals and residential care 365 days a year, which reinforces the fact of how important it is to support Mercy Home, both financially or any way you possibly can, to get the word out so people can be aware of what's going on. It's a open campus, not a lockdown facility. And these kids, like you say, they come and go. They go to very important jobs. They spend time being integral parts of the community. And who knows what that will lead to as time goes on.
Absolutely. So the support that you give to a child today, the support that you give to someone at Mercy Home, has an impact on the community in which you live now, because these kids are going to go out there again one day, and they are going to go out and make a difference. And so we got to get behind them and give them every resource imaginable. And that's what you do as donors. That's what you do, Kevin, by letting us come on and talk about Mercy Home. And we can't thank you enough.
Well, it's my pleasure, as I said before. And what's difficult, too, now, and I think you were experiencing it as our friend, Sister Rosemary at Misery Corda, the state funding isn't there where it used to be, and that's why it's so important that we get some private people involved in Mercy Home.
That's correct. You know, our tradition has been that we're almost entirely privately funded. We raise all our funds through things like the Shamrocks for Kids program and some of our other special events and private individuals who donate to us. And from all around the country too. So we have supporters all over the country. Mm-hmm. Great supporters who are, believe in what we do, and open up their hearts to us. And you know, again, it's a blessing for us that we have so much great support out there in the community. This time of the year is another great time to really, you know, kind of reinvigorate that support too. So you know, to get out there to reach people and hopefully, you know, introduce ourselves to some new people that could become lifelong friends of Mercy Home. And that's what we really depend on. That's what these kids really depend on.
125 years. I did not know Scott Donahue was that old.
Yeah, he's just a little older. Well, he started very young. But,
You know, of course, the kids go to school, too, and they go to schools in the area and so forth?
Absolutely. You know, some of the older kids kind of make their way on their own. Some of the younger kids, we drive them to their schools. But as you said, rightly, it's not a locked facility. These kids are learning, they're practicing what they learn in program every day out in the real world. They're going to school, they're interacting with other kids, they're living lives like other kids. They have extracurricular activities at their schools. They do everything that any other kid does, and we just have to support them in every way. And you know, a lot of our kids, we will match them with a school that's going to help them overcome the serious education gaps. By the time a lot of kids get to Mercy Home, they've been through so much that quite often they're a few years behind their grade mm-hmm. level in key subject areas. I mean, they're dealing with pretty life and death issues every sure. day. School doesn't seem to be high on the priority list for some kids.
Sure.
When you're dealing with people being, you know, killed around you and stuff, or the problems that you might have in your home, you know, abuse and so forth. So the educational piece is really big for us. So we try to send kids to schools that have the smaller class sizes that'll help them. So our kids are going to schools all over Chicago. They're going to a lot of the Catholic schools, some mm-hmm. charter schools, and you know, some of the public schools as well. So,
well, I know that John Chandler, our good friend John Chandler, is mm-hmm. part of the advisory board over at Mercy Home, and so are the Walsh people at the Walsh Group, and certainly Jimmy Curtin over at Solomon Cordwell Benz. And you have such a great resource in the business people in and around the Chicagoland area.
That's true. You know, in fact, I'm amazed at how generous they the business community is to us, and the way they help us, you know, raise funds that help our kids or provide other resources. For example, even in the example of Shamrocks for Kids, the Trump Organization is raising a lot of funds through Shamrocks
really?
At their hotel and towers.
Wow.
By allowing customers to add tips. To the bill.
That's a great
spa,
idea.
At 16 Restaurant, at the hotel, and other places. And Macy's this year, for example, is supporting us by making a donation every time we get a new Facebook fan during this. So if people wanted to help out with that, they could go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/mercyhome, and every new fan that we get, they'll make a donation up to, I think, $15,000. So they've been really great to us. And now here's another one, too. Blue Cross Blue Shield
mm-hmm.
Will be, you know how they light up the buildings with
right.
the lettering. They're going to be doing that for us.
This oh, year. Great.
It's been a dream of ours for a long
great.
Time. It's really, I'm very excited about it. And they're going to do it in such a way that it'll introduce a Twitter campaign.
So mm-hmm.
I'm not very versed on the Twitter thing, but as I understand it, they're going to put up our hashtag campaign, which is hashtag S, the number 4, and K. And what people can do when they inquire about that, they'll get updates through Twitter on all the Shamrock-related things throughout the next 3 weeks. So it's a very exciting thing, and we're really grateful to them as well. And to O'Brien's, who hosts us every year and is running the big raffle that people can participate in. They can actually get tickets on our website as well and hopefully win a trip to Ireland. And that's courtesy of American Airlines. So again, just in Shamrocks alone, there's so much business support, and then throughout the year, as you mentioned.
You know, it's terrific, and you know the young kids know all about that technological stuff, and there's always an angle there that they're going to come up with that's going to be new to us. But if it works, it works, right?
Yeah, we got a young guy who helps us figure all that stuff out. He's like 20 something, and I always ask him, you know, to explain it to me. But so.
Can the question be asked, what is the success rate or how successful have things been as kids have been coming to Mercy Home?
Sure. I mean, and obviously, we have a variety of measurements that mm-hmm. we try to apply to the kids' success. And certainly in the area of academics, one of the ones that really jump out at me is the fact that all of our kids graduate. And for the last several years, it's been
wow.
100%. And I think maybe 1 year in that 4 or 5 year span, there was one who didn't graduate. And you compare that to about half, about your 50-50 chance that you have in graduating in some of the bigger cities. So that's remarkable, particularly considering where these kids came from.
Sure, sure.
These are kids who, like I said, were very far behind. Here we are in a troubled economy. Kids, as you've probably seen some news reports about how difficult it is for younger people to get jobs. Well, we know that it's very important that kids get jobs, mm-hmm. not for money's sake, but to learn the things that jobs teach them,
yeah.
to learn that structure, to learn that sense of responsibility. That's an extremely therapeutic value. So, again, because of our friendships out there in the community, in the local businesses and some of the businesses downtown, our kids have an enormous success rate in getting summer, getting jobs, after school jobs,
yeah.
Internships. So a vast majority of them are employable and employed at any time. So those are just a couple. And then, you know, then you'll see a lot of the success in the stories that you can see on our website as well, too. But the kids who have gone on to do great things have gone on to give back to the community. I think about our Hoops to Homework program. In fact, we have it's an academic incentive program that happens every week, but we have so many former residents who come back to participate in that program because they just want to be good role models and show kids, to be a good role model for our kids. I think
sure.
one of the guys who's been there every weekend for, maybe 20 years.
Wow.
The guy who's a Cook County sheriff.
Uh-huh.
A really great guy named Dave, and he's just a great example of a success who's, you know, grew up on the hard streets of the West Side, and here he is now giving back. So
does it without any attention or personal gain or fanfare, just does it, right?
No, super committed. And, you know, I talked to him about this, and he says the reason his attendance is so good there and the reason his attendance is always so good at the sheriff's office, too, is because he knows that he represents Mercy Home there.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to represent well, and because and show that his values that he learned here were strong, and he wants to show the kids the same thing. So he wants to be reliable. A lot of these kids here grow up in circumstances where they can't rely on anyone, and that's the key here. So someone like Dave is showing them, there are adults out there that you can rely on,
sure,
and trust,
sure,
and that's the way you should be when you grow up. You know what I mean?
Heartwarming stories. Mercy Home for Boys and Girls is a Catholic organization answering the gospel call to minister to all children and families in need. Mercy Home saves young lives by providing a safe, nurturing home, opportunity for an excellent education, and means for personal growth. Supports healing for families, is committed to raising public awareness of youth in need, and encourages support to help them, and is sustained by benefactors who believe in the miracle of God's mercy in action. Once again, it's time to dust off the green sweaters and take out the Irish walking sticks as Mercy Home for Boys and Girls prepares for another wonderful event during the season of St. Patrick. Mercy Home for Boys and Girls invites the public to be part of a solution for kids in crisis this March while celebrating all things Irish. Throughout this month, its annual Shamrocks for Kids program will feature family-friendly, Irish-themed activities and events while raising funds and awareness that help abused, neglected, and at-risk children. Following the Chicago St. Patrick's Day Parade on March 17th, Mercy Home will gather with friends and family at Chicago Hilton on Michigan Avenue for Mercy Home's 17th annual Shamrock for Kids post-parade celebration. The party kicks off at 1 o'clock at the Chicago Hilton, 720 South Michigan. For information, 312-738-7551. On the line with us right now is my good pal Mark Schmelzer. Mark, just always a pleasure to chat with you, of course, and get the word out about Mercy Home for Boys and Girls. And March is certainly the best time as ever to do that, and certainly a lot of activities.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's such a unique way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and not just for the one day, but throughout the next several weeks. So particularly the family-friendly aspect of this, you know, after the parade, going to our celebration at the Hilton, some people go to bars after the parade, but this is, you know, what do you do if you have kids? I have a 2.5-year-old. What would I do with them? I couldn't take them to a bar. So this is exactly where I'll be.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. And it's as you said in your introduction, too, it really is an incredible fun time, and the kids are running around, and there's balloon animals and a lot of fun, and the adults have a great time, too, and it's just a sight to see.
Maybe a phone number or website one more time.
Our website is mercyhome.org, and the phone number for becoming a volunteer is 738-7551. That's the 312 area code. But if you want to buy tickets to the party, you can also go to our website, or you can call 738-8330.
Our best to Scott, and we're going to talk about this next couple of weeks and get the word out and have a lot of fun doing it.
Thank you again. I cannot thank you enough.
God bless you, my pal.
You too.
Thanks,
Bye.
Mark. Bye-bye. Mark Schmelzer, of course, from Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, the 17th annual Shamrocks for Kids celebration in honor of St. Patrick's Day. Father Scott Donahue and Mark Schmelzer and our good pal Richie Daniels, again, for information, 312-738-7551. William Shakespeare was the most remarkable storyteller that the world has ever known. Homer told of adventure and men at war. Sophocles and Tolstoy told of tragedies and of people in trouble. Terence and Mark Twain told comic stories, Dickens told melodramatic ones, Plutarch told histories, and Hans Christian Andersen told fairy tales. But Shakespeare told every kind of story. Comedy, tragedy, history, melodrama, adventure, love stories, and fairy tales. And each of them so well that they have become immortal. In all the world of storytelling, his is the greatest name. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago has dedicated itself to presenting free theatrical readings of William Shakespeare and other classical dramatists to Chicago area audiences. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago also offers education outreach programs on Shakespeare studies to local schools. The company draws its talent from the extraordinary pool of local professional actors, all members of Actors Equity Association, the Union of Professional Actors. The actors receive a stipend for their work, which is well below their regular union pay scale. Actors lend their talents to the Shakespeare Project because they share the project's mission of making the Shakespearean experience accessible to all, regardless of proximity or economic means. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, having been seen on the stages of the Steppenwolf Theater, Organic Theater, Oak Park Festival Theater, and Pegasus Players, studied at the National Shakespeare Conservatory, holds an MFA from Illinois State University, writer, playwright, teacher, mentor, one of the brightest stars in the world of contemporary Shakespearean theater, and the artistic director and a founding member of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. On the line with us right now is Mr. Peter Guarino. Peter, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you, and very excited about the Shakespeare Project. I wish I knew about it before, but I guess that old saying, what's the best time to plant a tree, 20 years ago or today? And here we're talking today.
That's right.
Of course, you're doing great things. Just had a great success with the Taming of the Shrew, and things are looking big and brighter than ever.
Yeah, we are just finishing up now our 17th season and getting ready to plan the 18th. And we've been very, very fortunate over this these many years to have some wonderful sponsors for our work here in Chicago area. The Newberry Library here in Chicago, which is one of our venues, and the Wilmette Public Library and the Highland Park Public Library are our two suburban venues, so we have been very grateful to them for their support, and of course our audience members who also have supported us over these many years. So we're very, very excited about the future.
Peter, you're one of the great Shakespearean aficionados in the Chicagoland area, if not the United States. Why do we need Shakespeare now more than ever?
Well, I think we need it because, you know, his stories are timeless. And he was such a brilliant man. If we look at his plays, there's so much learning. I think that's one of the reasons why we study his plays in the school, his characters and the challenges and the conflicts that each of them went through, whether you're looking at Henry V or Hamlet. You know, there's so much learning in each of his plays. And, you know, your introduction, I think, was very appropriate for us at the Shakespeare Project because we really are storytellers. We focus very much on the text of these plays and illuminating the language. And I think that's something which sometimes today in contemporary society, sometimes people don't feel that's enough anymore, that, you know, we have to add on something or a concept or somehow embellish the story to make it relevant. And in reality, you know, the language is, I think, what ultimately people find meaningful and get inspiration from, and that's really what we're all about.
Yet sometimes they find it a bit intimidating. We're season ticket holders at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and sometimes, of course, we have press openings that I go to, so I have my tickets open, and I'll offer them to friends of mine. And their first reaction is, well, geez, I don't understand it. Well, I say sometimes, well, you don't live in Elizabethan England. You're not necessarily supposed to understand everything that's being said, but if you have the feel to it, all of a sudden you get the cadence of what's being said, then you'll start to enjoy the beauty of the language.
Well, that's exactly right. And I heard an interesting statistic the other day that in the Elizabethan period, the English language usage consisted of about 50,000 words. And today, the number of commonly words used today in the English language is something like 3,000. So there's no really wonder why people, you know, don't recognize words that were, you know, that are present, you know, in Shakespeare's plays. But it also says something, I think, about what's happened, you know, to the English language over the years. And, you know, the other thing that we explain to our students when we go into the classrooms and we bring Shakespeare in the classroom is that, you know, it's not important to understand every word, right? That, you know, that and one of the important things that we also share with them is that Shakespeare was not meant to be read. That he was, you know, he was a playwright and he wrote his plays to be performed. And that the experience of actually hearing the language and experiencing the emotion that the actors bring to the work is really about, you know, the Shakespeare experience. So it's the same thing at, you know, at Navy Pier. If you go down there, you may hear some strange words, but, you know, you're going to get the gist of what's going on, I think, pretty quickly.
I'm sure some high school students would very much support that it's not meant to be read. It's meant to be, listened
exactly
to in a theater.
And you know, one of the things that we try to say when we go in and work in the schools is that, you know, if they're going to, let's say we're currently doing a tour of Romeo and Juliet, if they're going to study the play, start with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start with us first and let them experience the play. Let them see the performers and hear the language. And then give them the book, because now they're going to have a reference point and a kind of context to further their, you know, their study and their exploration. So, you know, that's something that we feel pretty strongly about.
You know, I don't know what your feeling is, but I so very much enjoyed the movie Shakespeare in Love. I just love the whole story behind it, maybe because I'm a romantic and I enjoy that. But I thought it was a way that maybe some people got introduced to Shakespeare that they would not have otherwise, and maybe elicited a little bit of interest in what this is all about, because it's just one of the most beautiful love stories in all of literature.
Well, that's a great point. And that, you know, we find even when we go into the schools and we work with middle school students who are 6th, 7th, or 8th graders, and we'll sit down and talk with them about what do you know about Shakespeare, and it's amazing how many of them are already familiar with Shakespeare through film,
mm-hmm.
right? It's something that, you know, I didn't really have, you know, growing up. My first exposure to listening to Shakespeare was my 9th grade English teacher brought records of Richard Burton doing Hamlet on
mm-hmm.
Broadway in 1964, I think it was, and we put it on the record player, and I heard that language come alive. It was like a real kind of epiphany for me to say, oh, wow, that's how that's supposed to sound,
mm-hmm.
and that's what that, you know, comes out. So really, anything that we can do to open up the media for students to either see the films or, you know, hear broadcasts of the plays, those are things that really, I think, enable their entire learning experience and prepare them certainly for a theater experience with Shakespeare.
Are the responses mostly positive when you come and see the kids and perform for the kids?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we do is we, like I said, we go into the schools, and especially for high school students, you know, to have four adults come into their classroom and spend any time with them, especially to bring something like a Shakespeare production into their classroom, they're blown away just by that. And, you know, we always do a talk back with them and an introduction to what we do as well. And they not only get, obviously, Shakespeare, but they're getting an introduction to acting and theater. And we get a ton of questions afterwards, not only about a play, but also about what's it like to be an actor? You know, where did you go to study? What are some things that you've been, you know, working on? That kind of thing. So they're very, very, very interested in, you know, in the art of theater, as well as what they're studying with the play.
And I think how you approach it too, Peter, is so important, because you get a little prologue about what the play is about, and then there's a talk back afterwards. I think that sometimes if you're talking about intimidation, whether it's going to a Shakespearean play or going to the ballet or going to the opera, people are intimidated because, well, I don't know what's going on. Well, if they had the time to take to get a little overview about the story itself and what it's about, then when they go to one of these entertainment exercises, they know what's happening on the stage, and they're not struggling as to figure out what's happening and also what's going on. They're able to enjoy just the art of the entertainment itself.
That's exactly right. And our theatrical reading season, when we go into the libraries, we have what we call a kind of 360-degree experience around the play. We have a dramaturg, and Michelle Shoup's been working with us now for the past two seasons. She does an excellent job of, you know, providing about a 10-minute introduction to the play and some historical context. She also points out things that for the audience to listen to or watch for during the performance.
That's great.
So that they can really latch on to certain things that you know they might otherwise miss. And then afterwards, we have that 15-minute or so debrief, talk back, if you will, with the audience. And that really completes the experience for them. So, I mean, you can walk into one of our performances, not know anything about the play, and really come out of it with, a very educated experience and a very potentially meaningful one, too, from the great work that our actors do.
Thoroughly exhausting approach to it, and I think that's just terrific. Now, of course, you also have a dramatic adaptation of Shakespeare's Sonnet and Songs, which you put together, you direct, adapted, and, of course, the music was composed by Chris Walls. My Name is Will. Tell us a little bit about that.
This is something that we created about 15 years ago, and I've always been fascinated by Shakespeare's sonnets, going back to my acting days. I frequently might use a sonnet as an audition piece. They're just wonderful little nuggets of raw emotion, really, is what they are. And I put together it's like a cabaret piece for four actors, and it has about 36 sonnets and about 10 songs from a dozen of his plays. And got together with Chris. Chris was one of the founding members of the Shakespeare Project, and I said to him, you know, I think there are some songs from the plays that kind of, you know, comment on or, you know, embellish some of the ideas in the sonnets. And he looked at them and said, yeah. And, you know, Chris is such a talented musician. He teaches at Old Town, and he's a, you know, an expert bluegrass musician. And he created some incredible music that we use in this presentation. And it's a combination of American folk music, pop, blues, and it's really quite remarkable. When people see My Name is Will and they experience it, they can't believe that music is really underscoring Shakespeare's, you know, words. And it's we've been performing it now, like I said, for about 15 years, and it's always a very popular piece anytime we take it out.
Well, I'm going to throw you a little curveball here now.
Sure.
I don't want to make this an easy conversation we're having here now. But it's been said that maybe it was Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford, that maybe wrote some of these sonnets for Shakespeare. So are we talking about Stratfordian or Oxfordian? There you go.
Well, I definitely come down. We've heard this a number of times. It's a very active Edward de Vere Society here in the Chicago area. And they've actually come out quite frequently and seen our work.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be on the Stratfordian side of the equation. I think the conversation is always wonderful because it's ultimately, it gets back to the fact that somebody created these wonderful words and these wonderful characters and plays. And, you know, maybe part of the romantic side of me really wants to believe it was Shakespeare. But I think that they're entitled to their opinions, and we certainly don't want to alienate anyone from coming to see our work. But we always have good conversations with them when they come out.
Somewhat of a compelling argument when you think of it. A common man like Shakespeare, how did he know so much about classic literature and know about world travel when he just stayed around Stratford-upon-Avon? And Edward de Vere was kind of a world traveler, educated by the creme de la creme of Elizabethan society and so forth, and had quite an education.
Exactly. And James Shapiro, who's a professor at Columbia University in New York, wrote a wonderful book about a year ago called Contested Will, where he gets into some of the conspiracy theories about why there is so much debate about Shakespeare and authorship. And if anyone likes a very interesting kind of detective tale about how some of those, you know, theories surfaced and what ultimately all this means, I highly recommend his book.
Well, certainly something worth talking about, and if we're talking about it, then we're paying attention to Shakespeare, right?
That's right.
Which is a good thing. You know, this is the beginning of a conversation. I don't want this to be the end of the conversation. I want to invite you back, of course, periodically to let us know what's going on with the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. You and I are going to have some conversations aside from on the air, I think, coming up, and I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, it's great that you're doing what you're doing, and we thank you for sharing your unique talents with all of us and your whole ensemble who does what they do so very well to the people of Chicago, because it's an integral part of culture and entertainment and something we need. We need to have the civilized kind of conversation about the greatest writer in literature.
Well, thanks, Kevin. I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate your helping us bring our message to your wonderful listeners.
The Shakespeare Project of Chicago was created to achieve three main goals: to bring to life the words of William Shakespeare and the world's other great dramatists, to foster the talents of members of Actors Equity Association, the professional union of actors and stage managers, to present the plays to members of our community for free. Our mission today includes educational outreach programs to augment Shakespeare studies for middle school, high school, and university students, with our approach driven by a simple goal: make the students' first experience with Shakespeare a positive one. Over the past 16 years, the Shakespeare Project of Chicago has produced theatrical readings of over 80 classic plays, each of Shakespeare's plays at least once, presented by professional actors to our audiences free of charge. Utilizing the talents of equity actors with credits ranging from Broadway, off-Broadway, regional houses, preeminent Shakespeare festivals, and the major Illinois houses, we make these passionately performed classics available to all without regard to income, race, age, or any other demographic. Our artistic focus is firmly rooted in the text of the play, illuminating meaning and emotion through the actor's exploration of the world in words. And on the line with us right now is the artistic director of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, Mr. Peter Guarino. Peter, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some more information?
Absolutely. Our website is www.shakespeareprojectchicago.org. And our phone number is 773-710-2718.
You know, a pleasure, Peter. And like I say, our conversations will continue, and continued success with the Shakespeare Project of Chicago.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you, Peter.
All right.
Peter Guarino from the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. Again, for information, 773-710-2718. Very cultured conversation about William Shakespeare. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Mark Schmelzer, of course, from Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, Shamrocks for Kids Celebration in honor of St. Patrick's Day. For information, 312-738-7551. And Peter Greener from the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, 773-710-2718. Very, very interesting conversation. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
How do you lose yourself to someone and never lose your way? How do you not run out of new things to say? And if we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear. In your eyes, I may not see for forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose the music